On this episode of Passive Real Estate Investing with Mavericks, I sit down with Augustino Pintus to discuss today's opportunities in multifamily and residential real estate.
Hey Mavericks, this is Ava Baukamp, and this episode of Passive Real Estate Investing with Mavericks is brought to you by Legacy Impact Investors. We are an industrial investment firm located in cash flow country, the Midwest. We strive to shield off risk and beat inflation, all while producing predictable cash flow. We curate real estate investment opportunities for busy professionals and other real estate investors seeking passive income. To learn more about what we do and connect with me, go to www.legacyimpactinvestors.com.
Maverick, noun, unusual person, a visionary, leader, go-getter, an independent thinker. They see the vision for their life and pull that future towards them with an unyielding belief that things can and must be better. They achieve what most won't. Innovative, influential, daring, and direct, with a remarkably high tolerance for taking calculated risk. A foe to the status quo. This is Passive Real Estate Investing with Mavericks. Your host, Neil Timmons, has been involved with over $300 million in real estate transactions. He's a published author, commercial property investor, and real estate syndicator. This show is for those who want to learn how to earn passive income through real estate investing. Now, here's your host, Neil Timmons.
Welcome to Passive Real Estate Investing with Mavericks, where we provide you actionable steps to grow your passive income and become job optional. During this episode, you're going to get to discover today's opportunities in multifamily and residential real estate. Now, for those of you who are new, I'm your host, Neil Timmons. I love passive income from real estate. Before I introduce you to today's Maverick, I want to make a request that at any point you like what you hear, well, give us a thumbs up. Be certain to subscribe to the show. Never miss a valuable episode. And if you love what you hear, well, give us a written review. Plus, be sure to look at the description of this episode. We packed it with thousands of dollars in free resources. Now, today, we've got the privilege to learn from a syndicator who's been involved in over $300 million. That's right, $300 million in deals. Prior to his career in real estate, he ran software companies. He was in that business for years. It ultimately all changed when he got fired one too many times and decided that he'd have to take control of his own life by being an entrepreneur. I would describe today's Maverick, someone who's very passionate about real estate and about the opportunities that are coming down the pipeline. Today's Maverick, I've got Augustino Pintus here with me today. Augustino, say for the audience's sake, who are you? Where are you from? What do you do?
Well, first off, thanks for inviting me. Greatly, greatly appreciate it, my friend. So I am a real estate syndicator. I am a multifamily developer and fund manager, right? So all, of course, is related to real estate. And one of the biggest things that I also am, the fourth thing, is an educator. I help people get into the real estate game too, right? But, you know, I learned a long time ago on the appropriate way to put deals together. And that is the common theme across the board with everything that we do, all across all four lines of business. And that's basically what we do, man. Now we have a very exciting time with a lot of opportunity, but the person out there who's looking at the headlines and the news has to just sort through all that garbage, because a lot of it's garbage, and look for the actual opportunity that's out there. And there's more coming too.
Well, it's going to be a fun conversation today. I want to uncover some of your background, your history, and then I want to go into kind of the news and then opportunity and how one sorts opportunity from all the things, sorts an actual deal from all the opportunities. How about that?
So yeah, sure.
Take me to the beginning though. Tell me about your very first commercial deal.
Well, very first commercial deal. Well, I'll tell you a little bit just before it, because it is important. So I was working in corporate. I worked in corporate for a long time, and I made my way up the chain of command, so to speak, running large enterprise tech and running large IT companies, right? That kind of thing. And I just didn't want to do it anymore. And so I got to a point where it's what led up to that is getting fired for the, I don't even know how many times I've been fired from these various corporate jobs, a lot. And I'm just never cut out for that. I'm an entrepreneur at heart. I've always have been, always will be. So I made a decision to do real estate and started really getting into, and I bought real estate prior to doing my first commercial deal. At that point, I'd probably been doing real estate 14, 15 years, mostly single family, small multifamily stuff, nothing crazy. The real first commercial deal, I was consulting in the corporate space, but I already made a decision that I was going to get out of corporate. I already knew I was going to get out of corporate. So I started working my way towards developing all the materials, the brand, the business, polishing up my pitch, doing all those things that had to be done. But I knew that I wanted to get my own deal as well. So my first deal was an 11-unit multifamily asset that had one extra unit that was partially completed. Now, I found the asset on the MLS, wow, of all places. So you don't find deals in the MLS, not typically, not multifamily deals, but every once in a while you get lucky. And I got lucky because the lady who was listing this thing, she's a real estate agent, not a commercial agent, real estate, like regular old real estate agent lady, yep, right? Nothing wrong with being an agent, nothing wrong with that. But she didn't really know commercial. So she took this deal, like, and the owner wasn't a commercial guy either. He was like a mom and pop type of guy. He just, sure, called up his friend, said, hey, list this. So he listed it, or she listed it rather. And I just happened to be on the MLS and I see it. And I'm like, this can't be right. It's 11 units. And it was like, I don't know, 12, 13,000 a door.
Wow.
So I call it up and I said, hey, is this available? They said, yeah. Worked out a deal, ended up fixing it up a little bit, needed some work, finished that last unit. And I sold it for like 35 a door, like, I don't know, 18 months later, less than that, you know? So
yeah,
killer deal. Yeah, phenomenal deal. So, but I kept my eyes open for opportunity. I was looking in other places that people don't usually look.
Just as a frame of reference, what year was that?
Oh God, that was, let me see. That would have been 18, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Bring me current. Tell me about the most recent deal.
Most recent deal. The most recent deal I would have to say is, it's our net lease business. So as I mentioned before, and I just glossed over this, we have our asset acquisition business, mostly B and C workforce housing. We do our development business, which is the bulk of where the money is right now in terms of like Rockefeller building, John D. Rockefeller's high rise. We're doing that one right now. We have other office conversions or ground up development. Specifically, we're doing urban infill, which is very important to note. Urban infill means that we're looking to build in and around areas where there's already transactions and people doing things, right? So we're not building 200 units in the middle of nowhere, mm-hmm, in tertiary markets. I stay away from all that stuff. I don't understand that kind of stuff. I understand like doing a deal where there's already people, there's traffic, there's money. That's what I want to do, right? Because it's very easy for the lease up, okay? The third line of business is the net lease business, and that is corporate-backed or franchisee-backed single-tenant assets. Dollar General, Dollar Tree, mm-hmm, VCA Animal Hospital, assets that are corporately backed, and no matter what happens, you always get paid good monthly solid return. It's nice. It's a risk-adjusted return. Very nice. Keeps the cash in the door coming in, right? Very predictable. And the last line is our education business. We have a mastermind that we run. The last deal that I did was a net lease business, right? Our net lease asset. We bought, I think it was a Dollar General, or was it? Mm-hmm. And we owner financed it. Mm. So we've become quite astute at owner financing. As a matter of fact, we owner financed the last five deals that we've done.
Wow.
So yeah, it's like we become very, very good at it. So just because where the rates are versus where the NOI is, it just doesn't make any sense to get lending. And lenders, they pulled back a lot, even on net lease assets. But yeah, it's like that's what's happening right now. But what with an owner finance type of scenario, you will get a far better deal. And depending on how you structure the deal, right, you can either do like a traditional owner financing or a land contract. The look is very, very similar. You're paying the individual that's holding the note, so to speak. The difference is who owns the transfer, right? I've done both. We've done both, you know, so then both have the advantages and disadvantages. I think the disadvantages are small. The advantages are huge. But anyway, yeah, it's owner finance, one of these Dollar Generals or whatever. Yeah.
The owner finance, and for the audience's sake, if you don't know what that is, the owner essentially becomes the bank, right? They're the ones who become the lender. You put a down payment down. You structure a loan with them for a defined period of time, just like you would a bank. And then sooner or later, you pay them off and refinance it out or sell it out.
And I'll tell you what, Neil, the interesting thing is that to the LPs that are investing in that deal, I mean, to them, it doesn't matter. It right. looks exactly the same. There's nothing special about it, right? that's the cool thing about it, is that it takes some doing to know how to put the stuff together. You have to know how to put it together, how to negotiate the terms, all that. It's a little different. But we do all that, you know, so that's the cool thing about it. That's in our blind pool fund that we ended up buying that asset in, you know.
That particular one that you negotiated, was there a broker involved in that? Or were you direct to seller in that particular
that
asset?
That one was, no, we use brokers for everything.
Hats off. Yeah. It becomes a much more challenging conversation utilizing owner finance when going through a broker versus direct explaining it to a seller has been my experience. So
No, this broker didn't make things easy. All right. So as a matter of course, I always use a broker to represent us, you know. Yep. But in this case, yeah, this broker was a complete tool, you know. So it was terrible. This guy made it more difficult than it needed to be.
You know, you and I say we're investors, which really means, and entrepreneurs, which really means we're problem solvers. And when we run through there and you get to a spot where oftentimes they're just transaction junkies, we're peddling a deal in the easiest, least work conceivable, least way they possibly can. When you introduce that owner finance conversation, it requires work and conversation and thought.
It does. Yeah. Especially if the individual is not sophisticated, and right. I don't mean in a disrespectful or mean way.
No.
What I mean is that they're not familiar with all the upside. Believe it or not, there's a lot of upside.
Tremendous positives.
And owner financing the deal. Tons of upside, you know? So yeah, I mean, who wouldn't want to do that deal, right? But sometimes if they're not aware of it, they don't understand it, they don't understand the upside, or they have to start doing their own education.
Yeah.
That's where the work comes in, you know, and yep. It does add time to the deal, unfortunately. But if they're sophisticated, I did another deal, I bought a warehouse. I got to know the seller. He and I became sort of friends, you know, that I said, hey, listen, would you be open to doing an owner finance thing? I was like, yeah, sure. You know, why not? I'll do it. You know, and it's like, that's actually a land contract. That's a land contract deal. Mm-hmm. So technically, he still owns the asset.
Right.
On paper, he owns the asset. So I'm still paying the old taxes and I leased it out, you see? So I bought the asset, I leased it out. This is not like a corporate guarantee deal, right?
Yep.
But I leased it out. And so it's like, he's still sitting on it. He doesn't get that huge capital gain.
Yep.
Right? It's a win-win. It's huge.
The strategy in that scenario is because you're in a municipality. What I hear you saying is you're in a municipality in which if you did transfer it, it moves from his name to your name, the taxes reset. You have a much higher tax burden on the property tax level. Is that what you're saying?
Correct. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yes. Yep. Thanks for clarifying that. But the thing is, though, is that first I was all twisted up about getting the deed in my name and his attorney wanted to protect him and yada, yada, yada. And I thought about it for a second. I'm like, no, you know what? Do it your way. It's perfectly fine. I don't care. I was like, net, it's the same thing anyway. Who cares? Right? It doesn't matter. Because you know what? I'd rather have it that way because then, just like you said, once it transfers, the tax rate gets reassessed and it goes up. Fine. So that means I get to squeeze some extra juice in the first couple of few years.
Correct. Right.
As a matter of fact, I think it's like a 24-month note. And when that thing comes up, I'm probably just going to go back to him and say, hey, listen, man, you want to keep this thing going for another 24 months?
Right.
Sure. Why not?
Right.
Because getting a decent rate, if he's happy, I'm happy. Why stop it? Let's keep it going.
That's incredible. Let's fill in the sandwich. We booked ended with a very sophisticated conversations, very sophisticated seller conversations to be able to get deals to the finish line. You started with lightning striking and you're getting maybe one of the most incredible deals I've ever heard of off the MLS. Fill me in the middle. There's a lot of things you had to learn along the way. What are the top two or three things you had to learn, the experiences you had to have to become the investor you are today?
Focus on your partner first, right? What I did was I put other people ahead of myself, right? Almost to my own detriment, almost. But I tried to prioritize the partner and try to deliver on what they need first. And it's quite easy, believe it or not, because I think that for many people out there, they will prioritize their own needs. And if you go in with that in your heart, you're not going to win. If I were going to partner up with you, Neil, and I get to know you, grab a coffee, figure out what's going on in your world that's causing you problems, or what is going on in your world that is painful to you, or maybe something you want to see happen in your life. If I could find a way to make that happen, then, hey, Neil, I have an idea. How about if we do a deal like XYZ? Now I'm delivering value. You have to lead with value first. That's how you build strong partnerships, right? And I learned that. I figured that out. And most people, when they approach me, they will say, like, how can you help me first? You know, that type of thing. Or the one question that really pisses me off is, So how can I help you? Neil, how can you help me? I don't know. How do you help me, Neil? Like,
right. Right.
It's like, I don't know. It's like, what kind of question is that? Right. I've always had people ask me that. It's like, I don't know how to answer that. It's like, you probably have to get to know someone first, correct, spend a little bit of time with them, understand what the core competency is, but always deliver value. Always deliver value, no matter what. How do you deliver value? Deliver value by making an introduction, understanding the individual, listening very, very closely to what some of the pain points they have. I'm talking to a guy right now, I don't want to disclose his name. If I said his name, I can guarantee you that 100% of your audience would know this guy's name. Guarantee it. Okay. And I'm listening to him, and he's looking for clients for his software company. You know what? I don't do software. I used to. I know, I understand how it works. But you know what? I know a lot of entrepreneurs, a lot of money. I'll connect you. I start connecting him with people, and he's appreciative. He's messaging me. He's like, hey, man, hey, next time we come to Los Angeles, I'll take you out for dinner. I'm like, cool, great. Lead with value. Don't make it about you. Don't always make it about you. And a lot of people do that. A lot of people do that. That's probably one of the biggest things I do. The second thing is, if you're going to make a presentation, if you're going to show a piece of material, don't make it look like garbage. Mm. Like in our mastermind, for instance, there is no room for error. I will bust someone's chops until they get it right. And I don't do it because I'm being a jerk to them or whatever. I want them to succeed. In this world, you have to think that, I think that a lot of people have just gotten really soft nowadays, right? Mm-hmm. And people think that they get a pass for certain things. But how you do one thing is how you do everything. And if that's, you have right, sloppy workmanship in your presentation, it looks like garbage, they're not going to want to do business with you. So make it look good. Put in the effort. Put in the extra effort to make it as good as you could possibly make it. That's a big deal for me. I try to do everything I could as best as I possibly can. I always do. I'm not going to say I'm 100% right all the time, but that's what we're trying to do. We try to make it as perfect as we can. So that's another big thing that we've done too. And one of the biggest things, the third thing I would say, is because my background is corporate, as much as I may rail on corporate, I've done plenty of that on other podcasts, yeah. But many other shows, many other podcasts, the one thing that corporate has instilled is the discipline around putting good, solid deals together. That's extremely important. And now more than ever, it's extremely important.
Well, let's talk about that. I think there's a lot of, if you read the news, and today as we record this, the news is varied from the sky is falling at one end of the news to we've come off November where the Dow Jones is up 7%, which hasn't happened in a long time. And like everything's great. And the truth probably lies somewhere in the middle. But underwriting and proper underwriting, it allows somebody to get through all the ebbs and all the flows. Mm-hmm. And so talk to me about actually doing a deal and doing a good deal versus some of the things that we read in the headlines today.
Well, I think that one word you used in your, just what you just said a second ago about the media, is the word lies, right? But I'm saying it in a different way. You said, yes, lies in the middle. Yes. I'm saying, no, yeah, just lies in, yeah, general, right?
Period.
It's like a lot of, mm-hmm, yeah, period. That's it. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's tongue in cheek, of course. But yeah, most of the media is going to perpetuate a bunch of nonsense. I don't want to get into any other stuff besides that, but we don't watch in our home, in our office, we don't watch the news. The news is like, we just don't do it. It's not even a thing, right? We're aware of certain things that are worthwhile of being aware of, but as it relates directly to you, your family, to me, the news in general is garbage and negativity that enters your mind and causes you to make bad decisions. So we just avoid it altogether, right? That's the approach that we take. When we're talking deals now, deal specific things, I was watching people put deals together, even when rates were 3%. Like, what was it? The one deal we're talking about in the green room there. When was that? That was like, I think that would have been like 2019, right?
Yeah.
It was a deal in South Florida. It was A-class asset, $400,000 a door, somewhere in that range. The rents were $1,600, $1,800, somewhere in that range too. Listen, that deal doesn't pencil. At 3%, that deal will not pencil. But these guys are counting on the greater sucker theory. The greater sucker theory says that I will buy this asset and some greater sucker will come around 8 months from now and pay me an extra $50,000 a door. Stupid. Dumb. Like, this is not some speculative nonsense. Like, I buy real estate the traditional way. We buy cash flow. That's the correct way to buy assets. And you also have to understand the markets that you're in too. I'm in Cleveland, Ohio right now. In this market, this is a cash flow market. There's appreciating markets, two different market types. There's some that are hybrids, but you always buy for cash flow no matter what happens. Like, I don't count on massive appreciation ever taking place. I expect some appreciation, but I don't count on it. That's why the name of our media and education business is Bulletproof Cash Flow, not Bulletproof Appreciation, right? There's a reason why.
Right.
It just sounds better, doesn't it, right? And I knew that deal would never pencil. Right. And they got in, they got out. Kudos to them. They made a nice, healthy return. Good for them. You know, they got the cheap money. They were able to get in and out. Great. You know, but there's other guys that they got in just before 2020. And, or rather, I'm sorry, not 2020. I think it was 21 or something, or even 22. I forget what year it was. They had no business doing the deal to begin with. And this guy bought three giant deals, mm-hmm. right? Yeah. It never penciled. Like, it was all published after everything imploded.
Right.
We ran the numbers on our mastermind. We did it as a case study. The deal never penciled, like ever. It never pencils from the beginning. The guy had no business doing that deal. And yet, here he is doing that deal. And it's no wonder it imploded. It's just not, you know, it's readily apparent that there's so many people out there that are doing bad deals. And I'm not saying it to scare people. And I'm not saying to be, that's not the case here. It's to really, as an LP, understand how these deals are put together. Like, really spend the time to understand the business plan and really if the numbers are realistic or not, you know? But the media itself is going to push whatever narrative is taking place. And I think the media has gotten even worse since the last election. So if you're watching the media and counting on the media to report honest, real material content, I think that you're overestimating their ability to do so, because they just won't do it. It's not in their best interest. Remember, the human species, we are wired to look for bad things and we pay attention to bad things. Why do we do that? Our species is set up to protect ourselves and protect our immediate progeny, our family, right? This is why when you're driving down the road and there's a big car accident, people slow down and they look. Why do they slow down and they look? They're looking to see what happened to that individual so it doesn't happen to me. I want to know what happened over there so I can learn a little bit. And then I want to make sure, ooh, I don't want that to happen to me. It's a biological thing. That's how we think, right? So with that understanding, is the news media going to promote good quality content? Of course not. They're going to promote bad stuff to get attention, pull in eyes, and sell ads. That's what their intent is, to sell advertising.
It's the business.
It's a business. And I'm not mad at it or whatever. It is what it is. So that's it. But don't get mad at it. Just don't pay attention to it. That's it. Like, get your information from quality sources that really actually care. Like, on my show, I do a webinar, like two webinars a week.
Yeah.
I'm talking about real stuff, real data to help people. That's it. That's the motivation. That's it. That's all I do, right?
Are you a passive real estate investor seeking financial freedom? Well, today's market's unique and it's ever changing. Now is the time to get educated on how to strategically invest in commercial real estate for long-term financial freedom. Grab your copy of How to Passively Invest in a Changing Economic Environment. Go to www.mavericksinvest.com. Let's talk about underwriting and what goes into actual underwriting. So it's imperative to properly underwrite to make sure that it actually is a deal, that it cash flows from day one. As an LP, you know, talking to somebody like you, somebody like me, somebody does what we do and they're evaluating our deal, whether they want to go into it, what types of things should they be paying attention to? What types of questions should be asking to know that, yeah, it's properly vetted and it actually deal works from the get-go?
Sure. So it really depends on what the overall business plan is at the initial set, right? So for instance, when we're doing our B and C type of assets, there's a certain business plan, very straightforward stuff, 70-30 split. We're looking to do a refi in, say, 12 to 24 months. Maybe it goes a little bit longer, depending on what's going on, whatever. But we're looking to return 60% of the investor's capital within that time frame, right? Or at the refi, mm-hmm. we're looking to return at least 60% of the investor capital. So we built a thesis around doing that. We have the targets as well. Usually it's like, we typically say an 11 to 14% cash on cash return, maybe 11 to 15% IRR, things like that. You know, so we define the overall target of what we're looking for, and then we try to find assets that fit that target. Okay, so that goes into the business plan first. It's not a blind pool, by the way. So we're not just going around, fumbling around, looking for deals. We define what the business plan is first. And once we know what the plan is, and we go out and we start talking to individuals, telling them what we're targeting, when we do find the deal that fits the buy box, they're not surprised. Oh, we found a deal that fits the buy box. Look, Mrs. Investor, here it is. Let me tell you about it. Let me tell you what the business plan is. And let me tell you why you want to invest in this deal. So part of it is defining what the buy box is up front, getting them educated on what it is ahead of time. And then when you do find the asset, 6, 8 months later, whatever it is, you're keeping communication with that investor over time, and you're getting them to come into that deal. Because if you're trying to scramble to try to find a deal, or rather trying to find an investor to do a deal, like right when you got the deal in your hands, that's the last time. You don't want to be doing that. You want to preempt all that. That's why doing this business requires a whole lot of work. I mean, it's not easy to do, right? But, you know, it's certainly well worth it if you can execute it properly. That's why if anybody's LPs are listening right now, they probably get a ton of emails from all kinds of different investors.
Sure.
That's what they're doing. They're priming the pump. They're keeping you engaged, right? And that's good. Those are the ones that you want to do business with. Those are the people you want to do business with.
Talk about, let's further that. You know, when somebody's in a deal, tell me about your communication plan. How do you keep investors informed about what you're doing through the life cycle of an investment?
Sure. So initially, we do a monthly newsletter that goes out. After that, it's quarterly, right? So every quarter, we tell the investors what's going on, how's working, what's working, what's not working, you know, how we're fixing it. Because if anybody says that everything goes hunky-dory 100% of the time, it's not true.
Right.
Stuff breaks. I mean, it just is. I mean, I can't go and tell people, oh, everything's perfect every single time. It's very disingenuous. There are people that do that, unfortunately. But if you just keep it honest with people, I think that you're going to get way further along by just being straight up. But yeah, the communication plan is a big deal. Not to mention, too, we also, like in our case, I put out a lot of content. We put out so much content already, right? And I stay in front of people. We're all over YouTube. We're on Facebook. We're on Instagram. We're on LinkedIn. We're everywhere, right? So it isn't like a guy that just takes the money, throws out a deal, and you never hear from them, or they're not even public. There's nothing published anywhere. That'd be kind of scary to me. We put out a lot of content and we stay very visible. We stay at the forefront. We try to. A lot of work to do that.
What should passive investors look for in a particular deal?
That's a good question.
Or maybe what should they be asking themselves to identify what their risk profile is, perhaps, so that
because that's what I was just going to say is that
I could see it spinning in your mind. Yeah.
Yeah. Because man, that's part of the problem is that I was talking to a potential partner the other day, and these investors are just looking for high returns. I just want a high return. Just want a high return. Just want a high return. How much risk do you want? Oh, I want zero risk. It's like, well, okay. So it's like, that doesn't exist. Like there's a certain level of risk and a certain level of return. And the higher the risk, the higher the return. Quite simple, right? I think up until 2020, the bulk of the deals that were getting really promoted out there were the typical B and C value add type scenario. Yeah, you go in, you buy the asset at a discount, you fix it up, you make it better, you increase the rents, everybody's happy, and then you start delivering a nice, healthy return. Well, I mean, I haven't seen those deals in a little bit now. It's been a little bit since I've seen that stuff happen, right? Those deals don't pencil anymore. Now it's all about buying B-class stuff and doing the same sort of deal, but the returns are going to be slightly less. However, a B-class asset is less risk. It's also doing, say, net lease. Net lease has even lesser returns, but it's a monthly risk-adjusted return backed by a corporate giant that says they're going to pay the lease every single month. Do you have to worry about a boiler going out? Probably not. Do you have to worry about the tenant trashing the place and then leaving in the middle of the night? You don't have to worry about that either. It's a different return profile. But that's okay, you know? So it really depends on what the investor is looking for. And this has to be just one thing. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, it doesn't have to be, I'm just going to do multifamily and that's it. I've talked to those guys and it's like, they get all wound up about the return, oh, this type of return on that asset or what? Like, why not just have some money put into some nice stabilized deal, some development and some net lease, a nice healthy return across all three keeps with the multifamily, stabilized multifamily, mm-hmm. nice quarterly return. You have development, takes a little bit longer because you have to build it or whatever. You have to recondition the asset. But at the end of it, you're getting a nice juicy squeeze. And then you have a nice monthly return with the net lease business. Three different things. It's all real estate. You still get all the depreciation. You still get all the upside in that regard. But they have three different return profiles, three different risk levels, right? It just really depends on what the investor is looking for, you know.
I view what you described as somebody putting together a traditional stock portfolio. You got a section in bonds, right? Very safe, just pay, you know, money coming in each and every month, and then all the way, you know, you're going to have some growth, then some stable stuff, some value add stuff, and then a little riskier segment of the portfolio to capture some of those upsides.
Yeah, and that's how we structured it, like when we put it together. The interesting thing, though, is that even the development stuff that we do today, I recognize that many lenders, even when times are good, they're like, they see development as a high-risk scenario, which is why I also do urban infill. Like, I only do urban infill. That's all I do. And like I said before, wherever there's traffic, there's money. When there's traffic, when there's people, when there's cars, when there's transactions taking place, there's money there. I want to be where the money is. Why would I go build 200 units in the middle of nowhere because the land is cheap? I'm sorry. I cannot subscribe to that. That sounds ridiculous to me, but that's just me. I don't do stuff like that. That's just not my bag, right? I would much rather do an urban infill deal, pay a little more money for the land, but know that I can fill the asset up quickly, get the returns I need for the investors, and make everybody happy. The lender's happy, I'm happy, everybody's happy. Why not do that deal, right? Are you going to get less money? Oh, it just depends on the deal, right? I mean, these days you have to build A-class stuff because the cost of materials are where they are, right? Sure. But you have to know how to do that stuff, right? And like I said, when it comes to the investor profile, again, it comes down to what they're looking for, right? The cool thing about it is, like I said, with any one of these three asset classes that we're doing, or, you know, these different types of this in this portfolio, three different return targets. However, all the benefits of real estate, because all of it's still real estate, right? So that's the cool thing about it.
Yep. Tell me, what are you most excited about in the next year?
Real estate. No, I'm just kidding. As you can tell, I'm really excited about real estate, right? I would say that right now, I met some friends at JP Morgan. And they were talking about distressed asset portfolio, some other things they're doing on the lending side, which they've never done before, right? They're actually starting to lend on multifamily. And typically, if anybody follows JP Morgan, they don't usually do stuff like that traditionally, at least out of the offices in Chicago, right? They don't typically do stuff like that. But there they are, they're doing it. Why? Why is JP Morgan doing it now? Why is JP Morgan launching a distressed asset fund today? Why? Is it because they're worried about real estate? I would say no. There's opportunities out there, right? And I think that if you're able to either scope out those opportunities or align yourself with someone that knows what they're talking about, you're going to be in 18 months, 24 months from now, when things finally get better, I predict anyway, you'll be in a much better position, because it's not about making money on someone else's tears. It's not about, you know, doing that way, especially I mentioned distressed assets. It's not what I'm talking about here, right? Or being predatory or things like that. It's like, look, some people bought stuff they shouldn't have been buying. Okay. So now that individual and all their investors are in a bad place. And the lender who lent them the money probably should have done it in the first place. They're in a bad place too. If I can get my friends and I, my friends being investors, my friends being my lenders, to come in and help out these parties and getting a deal at the same time to fix the mess that was created and enjoy the upside, why not do that deal? Why not help these people? You know, that's the way I look at it. Because at the end of the day, you know what? Right now, there's a man sitting at his table with a light on, and he doesn't know what the hell he's going to do tomorrow. He doesn't know. And if you can help him unwind that deal, even if he's got to take a small bath today, but the following day he'll have his mind clear, it has value. To some people, there's some value there, you know? So there's going to be plenty of opportunities. So right now, I think what we're doing right now is we're focused on helping these distressed guys, basically coming up with a fund of our own to help distressed people. And but I'm also excited about our education businesses too. You know, we have two masterminds that we run, and we help people get into the real estate game. That's how much I believe in. If I didn't believe it, I wouldn't be doing it. Right? There's plenty of opportunities out there. I don't want to tell you about a student that I'm coaching a student right now through a deal, and it's only a little fourplex. We have two masterminds. One of them is for the small mastermind, right? That's getting into small deals.
Yep.
And it's like, it started off at $750,000, and now they're at $480,000, right? That's how distressed that asset is. It's happening across the board. It's happening everywhere, right? It's crazy what's happening. There's opportunities there, but you have to know how to put the deals together, how to underwrite the deals, how to actually do that, right? So I'm super excited about this deal. I hope that I can help her get into this deal. I get nothing out of it aside from a thank you. But you know what? If I can help her get into her first giant deal, giant for her anyway, it's going to set her on a path to true freedom. You know, it's going to be huge for her, right?
Well, we've had the largest interest, the fastest largest interest rate increase in history. A lot of deals that traded at just a couple of years ago with 3 or 4% debt are looking at 7, 8, 9, 10, depending where you're at in the stabilized or non-stabilized asset. To me, it seems like that's the largest piece that's causing the distress in the marketplace from the operator standpoint. Would you agree with that? Are you seeing some other things out there largely in the development side that's causing additional distress?
On the development side, yes. And I think that when it comes to D-class and assets that are in that lower echelon of multifamily, D and C minus type properties that, you know, they call it workforce housing, right? Those folks, those individuals that own those assets, control those assets, are having a bitch of a time running them because they're under attack right now because of where we are in the economic cycle. Mm-hmm. Everybody get the landlords shaking their fist at them, mm-hmm. right?
Yep.
The courts are very pro-tenant, even in the so-called red states. This whole thing about red state and blue state is so stupid, if you ask me. It's so dumb. There's no such thing as red state and blue state. It's dumb. I don't even know why people say that. It's stupid. There's red areas and blue areas. There's red cities and blue cities, right? I live in a red state. I can assure you this is not a red city. All right? So I can assure you of that. Stupid. I don't know where these people come from, but it's ridiculous. And the thing is that this is what I'm saying. You have to know how to put these deals together. Mm-hmm. And those are the ones that are going to be under attack right now. And you have to be extremely careful getting into those types of deals. Got to be very, very careful about it. You know, you got to make sure that if you're going to take on one of those types of deals, say you're in an area that you can still run the asset properly.
Right.
And if your property management sucks, and there's a lot of crappy property managers out there, tons of them. And I'm sorry to say, there's more of them, more bad ones than good. You have to be able to pull the plug on those things.
It's not just about buying the deal right. You got to be able to run that deal right, especially in the workforce housing.
Hey, listen, buying a deal is easy. Mm. I'm telling you, buying a deal is cake compared to running it for 10 years profitably. That is extremely hard. The gurus on Facebook will not tell you that. Okay. One of these gurus was there, and I was like, buying the deal is easy. Getting into it, so, oh, no, it's not. Yeah. How many deals do you own, bud? Seriously. I've done $350 million worth of stuff. Tell me how much you've owned. Tell me. He couldn't answer. Well, of course, right? Stupid. You have to know how to run the deal. And if they cannot run the deal, a decision must be made to eliminate those people, replace them. Nobody wants to do that. Changing management sucks, but the individual must be able, the GP must be able to do it if it's necessary, right? That's what it comes down to, running the asset, you know, and that's where the money is made. The money's not made when you buy it. that's where it's different from a typical investment. The money is made when you run it, when you run it properly. That's what it matters.
The mastermind that you have, the two branches of the mastermind, is it solely focused on active investors, GPs largely, versus LPs?
I'd say for the most part, right? Yep. Now, yes, yes. But it's not to say that an LP would not get any benefit out of it. For sure they would. I mean, I think that by understanding how to put deals together, how they're put together, why they're put together in a certain way, what to look out for. Because, I mean, listen, I know some LPs, they just want to invest, and that's perfectly fine. Listen, if they want to invest in our deals, they can do that. Reach out to me, whatever. But I think a big part of it is even if they were to consume all the free stuff that we put out on the YouTube channel, they get a lot of benefit from that too. If you really want to do a deep dive and understand how to present, how to put things together, how to underwrite a deal, what to look for, what to not look for, then yeah, maybe it's more for those folks, you know, than it is for someone that just wants to be an LP.
No, that's fair. Let's do this. I want to move on to the final segment, what I call the final four. What do you think holds most passive investors back from hitting their next level, whatever that next level happens to be?
They're afraid. It's the same reason why people don't take action, is because they're not familiar with something, right? It's the same reason why when I mention doing an owner finance deal, what's this? Oh my God. You know, I get that reaction for someone who doesn't know. They're afraid. Their hands go up, eyes open. What is this? Right? They're afraid. They don't know. But once they know and they understand, then they're able to take action. And that's the bulk of where fear comes from, right? Overall, with anything.
Sure.
So that means getting educated on how to put deals together. And like I said, you don't have to come to a mastermind to figure that out. But if you listen to the material and you understand how the deals are put together, and you're aligned with a competent individual that knows what they're doing, then you're going to be in a far better position when you are looking at a deal and you understand the nuances and you can talk to an investor intelligently and say, or rather the GP rather, and say, well, what if XYZ doesn't happen? Then what do you do in this case? GP understands it. You're going to find that many GPs don't. The experienced ones, they do, they get it, but the inexperienced ones don't. And that's okay. I mean, and that's saying you shouldn't invest in them. Maybe you like the deal, maybe you like the individual, do it, fine. You know, I'm not trying to kill off a bunch of GPs or anything else like that. But what matters though is that like any investment that you're doing, any investment that you're doing, whether it's stocks, bonds, NFTs, which are hilarious, by the way, you have to understand what it is, why you're investing in it. Why are you doing it? By the way, NFT, I heard that, what's a soccer player? Ronaldo?
Ronaldo.
I guess he's getting
or
sued.
Or Messi.
Yeah, okay. One of these guys. He's getting sued and because he was promoting NFTs. It's so stupid. You know what NFT, you know what it stands for, right?
I can't wait.
Yeah. Non-fungible token. No, that's what it stands for.
No, that's true. Yes. Yeah. Yes.
And it's like, and you understand what non-fungible means. It's not worth anything. Non-fungible means something is transactable. Non-fungible, it literally says it in the name that you can't do anything with this token. It's a non-fungible token. They're going to sue the guy because they lost all this money because they can't do anything with these tokens.
I'm shocked. Yeah, right.
It's hilarious, man. It's just so funny. But I thought that was funny. I had to share that with you.
No, that is great. What are you passionate about outside of real estate?
Outside of real estate, CrossFit, health. I stay very, very healthy. Been vegetarian now for, 34 years at this point. Wow. So long, long time, and do CrossFit every single day. So that's probably the only fun I have, which involves a whole lot of pain sometimes. But yeah.
Yeah. Your favorite book?
I say In the Shortness of Life by Seneca. That book changed my life because I realized when I read it that we're not going to be on this planet forever. I think in the book, actually, there's a passage in there that says that men, meaning everyone, mankind, we tend to live our lives as if there's no expiration and the expiration day will come. Do you really want to spend it doing what you're doing right now? Or would you rather be spending it your time as you wish, you know? So really made you think, made me think, I'll tell you that. So I think it was probably at that point where I made a decision that I'm not going to be doing the corporate thing anymore. That's why I quit.
Favorite way to make an impact in the community?
I would say that it doesn't always have to be a big thing. If I can help, I really love to help. I really do like to help people. I really do. And if I can help just one person get into their first deal, and even if it's a single mother getting into her first deal, that is the best way I can help someone get build some success. And part of it is that they have to want to do it, right? I really don't believe in giving out handouts or things like that. I'm just not that guy, you know. I want to help people. They have to be willing to be helped as well, right? It's very, very hard to help somebody that doesn't want to be helped, right? So
can't coach the non-coachable.
Exactly.
Yeah. Augustino, this is a wonderful conversation. Your wealth of knowledge. I know we could sit here and talk for hours. For people that want to continue this with you, meaning they want to find you, they want to follow you, and they want to connect with you, where can they go? What should they do?
Sure. Bulletproofcashflow.com. Go there. If they want to connect, I think the best way might be to probably just go there. There's a form you could fill out, whatever. But we have a bunch of free eBooks on there too. So if you go to, I think it's bulletproofcashflow.com/free-ebooks or something. I don't know, books or something like that. You can go there. There's tons of material all for free. YouTube channel's got over 800 videos, all real estate related. We've interviewed over 400 people on our podcast, one of the longest running podcasts now in real estate. So it's been quite the journey. But yeah, we've interviewed so many people on that show. So yeah, it's wealth of knowledge, totally free. All the stuff's free.
No, it's incredible. Links below in the show notes for everybody. Augustino, I appreciate your time. Thanks so much for being here.
You bet. Thanks for inviting me.
To our listeners, pat yourself on the back. You guys have made it to the end of the show, and most people never finish what they start. If you receive value from today's show, be sure to share it on LinkedIn, your Facebook page, or your social media platform of choice. Subscribe to never miss a valuable episode in the future. And if you found value in today's episode, give us a thumbs up with a positive review. If there's a particular topic you'd like to hear about, well, I want to hear from you. Shoot me a message on LinkedIn. The link to my profile is below in the show notes. You can connect with me there for more valuable content.